Welcome to The Window Light, where we explore the unexplained through personal accounts and documented reports to find the truth and bring it to light. I'm your host, Coy, and this is episode 3, entitled Clydale and Kate. In this episode, we speak with historian about town Kate and her unexplained experiences at the historic Clydale House in Northern Virginia and its connections to the infamous John Wilkes Booth. To the best of our knowledge, the paranormal occurrences experienced in this home have never been documented until now. My wife Jamie joins us for the second half of the interview and offers up her take on Kate's experiences, and we open the doors on what may end up being something of an ongoing area of investigation. As always, nothing is answered, but we certainly do bring up many questions here. And thanks to Kate's testimony, further research can now be done in this area. So without further delay, please enjoy episode 3, Clydale and Kate. So we have with us today historian about town, Kate, and you were kind enough to send me an email regarding some experiences. I counted 3 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me the name of the place to make sure I'm pronouncing it correctly?
Sure, it's Clydale.
And this is in King George County, Virginia. So this is going to be a difficult one because you had so many different experiences there, and the house itself has such a history. So what I want to know, just right off of the bat, before we get into the experiences that you have, how did you come to be acquainted with the building and the homeowner or owners at that time? And what year was this?
Oh, gosh. This was probably around 2006, 2007, maybe. I had gotten to know the homeowner, the then homeowner, through mutual friends. She was involved in doing a lot of things in the historic, historic documentary circles and things. And a lot of my friends from college were involved in that as well. So that's how I got to meet the homeowner. She ran a business out of the home. To provide historic clothing and props and things like that to production companies doing historical documentaries. And so she would need help sometimes putting clothing allotments together to send to film sites, or if she was getting ready to go work a shoot, she would ask for some help. And so me and my friends from college would go out there. I went to a college in Fredericksburg, so it wasn't too far away. We would go out and just help, pull clothing. She had these big trailers on the property that were divided by male or female or divided by different time period. And we'd go work in the trailers and pull clothing and things like that, whatever she needed help with. And it was fun. We were all studying history and it was a fun little job to have.
Well, I did a little bit of research on the property, and I see that it's currently owned by different people than it was when you were associated with the property. Something I think we need to bring up immediately in this interview is the fact that despite my best Googling, I have not been able to find a single account, article, reference of any paranormal type of events occurring at this building at all. There's nothing out there.
It surprises me, but it doesn't surprise me that it's not out there, because so many people I know have had similar and different experiences from what I emailed you about. But it's nothing that, like, you're not going to find like a Ghost Hunters show episode having gone out there. But it's like every time I mention the name of this house to somebody, they go, "Oh my god, did you see a ghost?" or "Tell me what happened to you." It's like so prevalent in our little kind of community.
So let's talk about the house real quick. Built 1858, if I am correct on that. The original owner was a Dr. Richard Stewart.
Yes, that's my understanding as well. Yeah,
you sent us an email regarding your experiences. And you mentioned in that email, when you were first telling us about it, that other people had told you that they had found the place somewhat unsettling.
My college roommate at the time, had mentioned to me that it was kind of a creepy house, but I don't remember if she's told me anything specifically about it. Probably within the realm of like maybe a half a dozen people that I had known at the time had mentioned to me that they had weird experiences in the house. My college roommate told me after the fact, she had been at the house too and was with me at one of the times that something happened. She had told me that in her history of traveling to the house and working at the house, that when she would leave at night coming out of the driveway, she always made a point not to look in her rearview mirror because she was afraid that she would see like someone watching her from a window, like someone watching her drive out of the driveway.
From up in the house.
Yeah, from inside the house. And there's, you know, and at the time, the homeowner, of course, lived there. And at various points, she did have one or two other people living with her. But those were not the people that my roommate was worried about. She was just always so sure that as soon as she looked out her rear view window, somebody would be watching her drive away. So it just, I mean, but Drew's college roommate also had experiences. He had an experience of spending the night in the home and being woken up in the middle of the night on a couple different occasions. One of which was he was awoken by somebody tucking him in.
Yeah, I remember that from your email, mm-hmm. A ghost woman tucking people into bed.
Yeah.
Did he have any more detail than that? Was that
I feel like my memory, I haven't gone back and asked him about this. But in my memory, it was like an African American woman, kind of that figure, tucking mm-hmm. him in and tucking him really, really tightly into the bed he was sleeping in. And then another one of
he had physical feeling.
Yes.
Like this wasn't just an unsettling sense. He actually felt it.
The way he described it to me was he was actually being tucked.
Wow.
Then another one of my friends around this time had told me that she was spending the night in the house and woke up to the sounds of a party happening downstairs. When, of course, there was no party happening downstairs. And the way she described this to me was she heard like the clanging of dishes and silverware and people talking and general movement, but she described it as a party. I don't know how many other people were in the house at the time. I don't know if anybody else corroborated that or if that was just something she experienced on her own.
How long did that last? Did she say how long she heard those sounds? Was it?
Okay. I don't know if it was like a split moment and it was over. Well, I take that back because, again, this is going back in my memory, but I'm seeming to remember that she did go downstairs to investigate just to ensure that there was nothing going on and she never saw anything. So would assume it lasted long enough for her to need to go check it out.
This is a two-story house or three?
Oh, gosh. I would say from my memory of being in the home, I would say two stories plus an attic.
Plus an attic, yes. And we're going to get to that a little bit later as well. Your attic experience. We'll call that the third one. So let's talk a little history real quick. We did allude to earlier the fact that this house was in John Wilkes Booth's flight path. Do you want to give us a quick little synopsis of that involvement? Because that I think that lends right into your first encounter. We might as well bring it up now.
Yeah. Oh, and there's even more I could go into about things that I had heard about the house, but it does go with the story too.
Okay. Throw that in too, because I know you talked about carriage lights and. So go ahead.
So I am not the 19th century Civil War historian in my house, but, but of course, John Wilkes Booth is very famous for being an actor who shot Lincoln at Ford's Theater. After he does so, he leaps from the balcony onto the stage below and breaks his ankle, breaks his foot, And then after that moment, he has to, you know, get out of Dodge, as it were. So he has this escape route, but he didn't plan on having to do all of that, being injured, as drastically as he was. And so, the first stop, or one of the first stops that he's trying to make, is to a doctor to try to, you know, get his leg set, get his ankle set. And the story goes is that, he goes to this home, Clydale, because Dr. Stewart lives there. And he goes up to the house and he's asking Dr. Stewart for aid. And the story goes is that Stewart did not treat him, you know, refused to treat him. I don't know if he knew what Booth had done or what, you know, how much he knew about the situation. But the story is that he refused to treat him, but did allow him to stay on the property, but he had to stay outside. But that leads into some other spooky stuff happening at the house where, and this I heard from the woman who lived there and who owned the house at the time, that she would see carriage lights coming towards the house. But the interesting thing, and hearing the sound of horses and things, but the interesting thing is that this often happens in historic homes that have been, made to kind of grow into the more modern landscapes that surround them now. So the way the house is situated now is it's actually in the middle of a subdivision, a modern subdivision. But the way that you approach the house in the 21st century is actually the historic back of the house. The historic front of the house is kind of looking out into nothing, into woods, into different parts of the subdivision. That's the area that she would see things approach the house from, which I think is interesting. Lights coming towards the house from that direction, the sounds of carriages and hooves and things like that coming not from the modern approach where you might see a car light, or my college roommate not wanting to turn around as she drove away. I mean, that's what you would think, like, oh, it's a car light, but that's not the side of the house. Like, I'm really trying to drive this home here, because the driveway for the house now is the back of the house. There is no access from the other direction as there would have been in the 19th century. And that's where she saw the lights. That's where she had the sensation that somebody was approaching the house.
And she told you about these experiences before you ever went to the house yourself? Like, is this something that was on her mind, or did it just happen to come up when you were there?
No, it came up when I was there. Okay. I don't remember really being told too much about that. I mean, I think when I met her, I mean, the first thing that kind of happened to me at the house was the first time that I met her. And that would have been when I heard these stories from the homeowner.
You also mentioned something about reports of sounding like someone walking around and dragging a foot.
Yeah, that was another thing. Yeah.
What was that all about?
That was something else that the woman who owned the house had mentioned, that she would hear just someone walking around, and what she would hear was like, you know, your foot coming down and then a drag, and a foot coming down and a drag. And of course, the implication is that, you know, in her mind, this is John Wilkes Booth, you know, with a broken ankle, hobbling around and dragging his leg behind him. but I mean, I think when I first heard this, you know, well, I don't know, because the thing that happened to me, like, happened so quickly in my own kind of interaction with the house. But I think if I had heard any of that before, it would have been very easy for me to think, well, okay, this is all power suggestion. Like,
right.
So,
I want to establish is that you didn't know any of this until you got to the house.
Not to this extent. I mean, I had certainly heard that it's a creepy house and that things had happened, but the things that happened to me are, I don't have another, like, I don't have another experience to corroborate it with. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm this creative to make this stuff up in my own brain.
I'm with you. Well, yeah. Well, let's jump into your first experience there. And I guess it pretty much happened right on the doorstep.
Yeah, right on that doorstep.
Walk me through
sure.
that experience and your feelings, especially what you were seeing. Just you take it.
All right. So first time at the house, I was with my roommate at the time, college roommate at the time. Get out of her car, walk towards the house, knock on the front door. Well, the now front door. And we're on the porch. The door opens, and from my vantage point, the door opens and it swings into the house. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So the hinge, this becomes important later. The hinge would be on my right-hand side. So the owner is standing there kind of in that void in the door frame. And, you know, she welcomes us in. And the funny thing is this. So she swings the door open to allow us to come in. And I remember being on the left-hand side. So what I would have done in any normal circumstances, you know, you would just walk in the door and not think anything of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you would kind of walk in, and there's this big hall. When you walk in the house, it's a, you know, pretty typical 19th century, you know, architectural construction. So you walk in, there's this big hallway, large center hall. And you would just walk in and stand there and kind of wait to be told where to go or, you know, whatever. But I didn't do that. I didn't walk straight in and just kind of stand there. As soon as I walked through the door, it sounds so stupid even saying it, because it's just so ridiculous. I walked in and I just felt myself kind of being repelled to the other side of the room. Like So what I did was I walked in and I immediately took this very large step around the homeowner. So she was still holding the door open. I took this big step around her and kind of ended up like behind her / behind the open door, if that makes any sense. Which is so stupid. Who does that? You should just walk in the door and stand there and say, thank you for having me. It's nice to meet you. I didn't do any of that.
It's very awkward. It's not a normal thing to do.
So I walked in and there was just something that I was not allowing myself to inhabit this space. I just had this intuitive reaction to walk through this space and get out of this space as quickly as I could. And I just ended up on the other side of the door. And like I said, nothing pushed me, nothing touched me. I just couldn't inhabit this little space. So that's, you know, weird. And I'm, you know, feeling very awkward about it, but you know, it is what it is. And so the homeowner had said, oh, hey, I just got this new piece of, you know, well, you know, this new antique. Let me tell you about it. And she kind of turns around to shut the door. And then she shuts the door and I see what she's gesturing towards. And there at the door that I just walked by is this desk. It's a school desk. It's just this, you know, really ordinary looking school desk with a kind of an inclined top. And it, you know, I mean, not too dissimilar from the old school desks that we grew up with, right? And she says, oh, I got this from apparently, as she explained it, from the childhood home of John Wilkes Booth. And she really wanted it at the house. It was his school desk. And she knew the connection that she felt Booth had with the house. And so she wanted this piece in the house to kind of, I don't know, pay homage to that connection. And so as soon as she said that, and I'm like, oh my God, because that piece of furniture, that desk, was right there inhabiting that space that I sideswiped, that I kind of propelled myself around. And so the rest of the visit, you know, goes how it goes, and I don't really remember anything about it. I remember my roommate and I driving away, and I remember us laughing, you know, don't turn around, or don't look, you know, don't look in the rearview mirror, don't look at the house when you drive away. But then that night, I just remember I had this extremely vivid dream about John Wilkes Booth. And I know this sounds really stupid.
This is my favorite part.
Oh, well, okay. I just had this really intense, really vivid dream about John Wilkes Booth. And in this dream, can't explain it, I was his girlfriend. And I don't remember the details now, but I remember being like, the only word I can think of here is disturbed. Like, I was very disturbed by it. I wasn't amused by it. I didn't think it was funny. I told people about it. My husband, my now husband, boyfriend at the time, Drew, I told him about it. He remembers me being really upset about this. And it happened for a couple nights after that. They were different dreams, but it was all kind of around that theme. And then I had mentioned this to another woman who had been at the house. Mm-hmm. I said, like, hey, I went to Clydale. I had this really weird experience. I've been having these dreams. And she laughed it off. And she was like, oh, that just means he thinks you're cute.
Oh, boy.
So from that moment, I used to be really interested in, the escape path of John Wilkes Booth, like through Northern Virginia and Maryland. You know, I used to be really into Civil War history. Like, I stopped. I cannot. Like, I have been so disturbed and distressed by this. I absolutely cannot bring myself to read books about this. Or, I mean, I know this sounds so stupid, but it's like he literally got into my head.
Sure.
And yeah. I cannot. I know that in your unconscious self and in your dreams, I know that your brain is trying to make connections with things, or at least that's kind of how I comprehend dreams and dream states. So, you know, trying to work out something from your waking life, trying to make sense of something that maybe didn't make sense. I could see how I would go to sleep that night, being disturbed by the events of the day and kind of having this really, you know, visceral kind of subconscious reaction. Like, I could get that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never had, yeah, I can't think of an equivalent. I can't think of another experience that I've had like that. And I'm very interested in it because of what I do in my day job. I'm very emotionally attached to stuff in terms of mm-hmm. how I do my job and doing material culture history. And so I'm really kind of intrigued by my own experience of being like physically and emotionally repelled by a thing.
Right. Yeah. You deal with artifacts on a daily basis. Yeah. One of my questions was going to be, have any other objects that you've encountered ever repelled you in such a way? Have you ever had an adverse reaction to a physical piece of history?
I mean, certainly emotionally, but not in what I would consider, you know, kind of an unexplained or potentially paranormal way, but certainly on an emotional level.
Would you consider yourself someone who has always been somewhat, I don't like to use the word believer, so to say somewhat interested in the unexplained and the paranormal before you had this experience in the house?
Yeah, I think I would think so. But again, not really from the perspective of like more, I think more because I've always been interested in the past. I've always been interested in connecting with the past and with history. And so I think every time I have sought out, you know, learning about experiences that people have, or watching Ghost Hunters or whatever it is, or listening to ghost stories. For me, I think it's a way of, in a really weird way, feeling more kind of connected to what I study, to mm-hmm. what really drives me. And that's the study of the past. And so it's not really, for me, it's not about life after death. It's not about the unexplained. It's about kind of brushing up against this for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that probably sounds so weird, but that's where I come from, I guess.
No, that's a wonderful perspective. It doesn't sound weird at all. But it does lead me right into your next encounter. Wonderful segue. you were back out at the site sometime after this, and you can set it up for me. But apparently, you needed to go back into the house, but you refused to go in there by yourself.
I did, and I was with my then boyfriend, now husband, who yeah. So yeah, Drew and I were working at the house, again, helping the owner with getting something ready for some documentary that she was working on. And we were there. It was our understanding that the homeowner was gone. She had to run out and do something. So there was, so she wasn't going to be there, but we ended up working in these trailers that were outside with all of the stuff in it. And we needed to go in. I needed to go in and use the bathroom. We'd been there all day. And I'm like, I'm not going in alone. I'm just not. It's broad daylight. I'm not going in alone. So I drag the boyfriend into the house with me. And we did not, in my memory, we did not go through that door that I had that experience in before. We had gone through this side entrance, and it was open. It was unlocked. And so at that time, the woman who lived there had a roommate, had someone else who was living there. A gentleman was living there with her. And he was normally around. And we just hadn't seen him all day, but I just expected him to be there, no big deal. So when we walked in the house, we walked through the house to this half bath that's on the first floor underneath this staircase. So stairs up, landing, stairs up, landing. And the bathroom was kind of situated underneath one of those landings. So we walk in and kind of hear shuffling, hear moving around, hear footsteps upstairs. And we just assume that it's, you know, the roommate. And so we're like, hey, you know, we're in here, we're using the bathroom. And I go in the bathroom, do my thing. Boyfriend waits outside, and I go out. He goes to the bathroom, and I'm standing there, you know, like right outside the door, because I don't want to be in the house alone. So I just remember I'm like right there at the door, like waiting for him to finish. And I'm hearing, you know, footsteps. I'm hearing walking, you know, walking back and forth. And again, I just assume it's the roommate.
Are you hearing it the entire time?
Yeah. I mean, because it was nothing. It was just someone's, you know, walking around. It's the roommate up there walking around. And I remember calling out, hey, it's Kate. And it stopped and then kept going again. So Drew comes out of the bathroom and I'm like, hey, I think, you know, whatever his name was, the roommate, I'm like, oh, he must be upstairs. And we're hollering out to him. No response. Okay, fine, whatever. He doesn't want to talk to us. Fine. We go back outside, keep doing our thing. And we're outside working, doing what we're doing. And then all of a sudden this car drives up. And we're like, oh my God, guess who it is? It's the roommate we thought was upstairs in the house. I mean, there's no other way to, you saw this coming. There's no other way to make that reveal.
And roll credits.
That's right. And so he gets out of the car, starts coming up to us to say, hey. And we said, oh my gosh, we just went in. We were talking to you. We totally thought you were upstairs walking around. And he got this big childlike grin on his face. And I will never forget this moment. He just went, "Hoo-hoo-hoo, you got ghosted."
Oh, ghosted is the word ghosted. He used.
I will never forget that moment.
We're going to spell this G-H-O-S-T-I-E-D, ghosted.
That's how I would spell it.
That's fine. That's fine. We'll put that in the show notes. So him saying that led you to believe that he has had experiences like this because he lives there.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't ask like, what did you hear? What did you see? Nothing. It was just like, oh yeah, that tracks. That makes sense to me.
And you didn't press him any further on.
No, okay. I was fine. I mean, I think Drew and I both were okay not needing to go further with that.
I'm gonna go on a limb here and say that that Drew doesn't really have the stomach for this, right? This is not his favorite. This is not his favorite point of conversation.
I don't. Well, the funny thing is, I don't think he thinks about it one way or another.
Mm.
Like, you know, okay, fine. If I, you know, I mean, and I've had experiences separate from this that he has just kind of been like, oh, well, that's interesting, and then that's it. I'm like, well, thank you for the comfort.
Okay. Well, you know, rest assured, I'm gonna get to the bottom of Drew's real thoughts on this because I've got him slated here for about 3 additional shows this season. We're gonna get his take on a lot of paranormal type topics. So,
well, I look forward to hearing the answers to those questions.
we're gonna get into it. Don't you even worry. So let's move on to into the third experience.
Okay. So the third experience that I had at the home, again, myself and a group of friends were at the house. Unfortunately, our friend, the homeowner, had passed away. And the estate really needed help sorting out what was what and getting the house cleaned and things like that, as you do. And so we showed up to help, and it was a large group of us. I didn't really know really how to help. So I thought, well, people are making piles of things and things that were going to, you know, stay with the house. We're going to go up to this attic space. And I thought, okay, I can't really sort anything. I'll just be a runner. I'll, you know, give me a box. I'll take it upstairs. Give me a bag. I'll take it upstairs. So, I start doing that. I grab a bag of something and I'm taking it upstairs. And as I'm walking upstairs, as I'm approaching the door and the light's off, I have to turn the light on. As I'm approaching the door, I had this thought come through my head. Okay, I can do this. Don't bother the man up here.
Mm.
Let me
pause you real quick. This line of "don't let me bother the man up here," is this your own voice in your head or someone else's voice in your head? Okay.
No, it was my own. That's a good question. It was my own voice floating in saying, "Don't bother the man that lives up here." And in my thoughts, I just remember at the time being like, okay. And then it took me like a second to be like, well, what? Like I just accepted it. And then was like, that doesn't make Kate, what? That doesn't make any sense. And I just had this again. I know this sounds so stupid. I cannot explain it. I had this, I don't even want to say feeling. I had a knowledge that there was a man up there and that, and in my unexplainable knowledge, this man lived up there. And my brain, it's like my brain just reminded me of it for a minute. And I accepted it until I snapped back into it, back into reality and thought, wait, that doesn't make any sense. What, man? But there was this kind of remembrance or acceptance that occurred for a split second.
Mm-hmm.
And in my memory, I have a feeling that it was a tall man in a black suit. Again, I can't explain this. It just happened.
There had to be somebody up there if somebody was walking around.
Yeah, this was another
Jamie's gonna ask you a couple of questions now.
Wow.
Yeah. Jamie's got thoughts.
Okay, I want to hear Jamie's thoughts.
She needs to ask you questions, so she's gonna ask you questions.
Fix my head, Jamie.
Well, there could be a couple of explanations for that. I guess it could be your mind trying to reach back and explain why you heard all those footsteps.
Oh, for sure.
But it could also be the memory of your dear boyfriend that lives in the house.
Now, my feeling is that Kate is not super thrilled with being the girlfriend of JWB. We'll call him.
I will say he was not the most attractive of the conspirators. I do have thoughts on that.
And yet she has dreamt of him at least three times. Yeah. Maybe more. So where would you take that, Jamie?
I think it's interesting that this kind of feeling and thought springs from a school desk. You know, I just find it interesting that he has kind of attached himself to something from his childhood, possibly, if that's what's going on. So is there something that happened in his childhood that caused the trauma that happened later in his life?
That's interesting.
Yeah. And do we know, and I haven't looked it up, but do we know if he had a girlfriend at the time he was fleeing?
Was her name Kate?
Was her name Catherine?
Good Lord, I hope not.
Was she a historian about town?
I will have to leave it to someone else to Google that because I am not going down that road.
No. It'll be interesting. Yeah, we'll have to look into that just to see if he was and if there was some kind of something that sparked that memory, you know, or something that sparked that feeling when you walked into the house.
Yes. But I like what you said about, like, because obviously there's kind of two heads to this coin, right? Or two sides of the coin where I had a reaction to the thing, but if I had a reaction to the thing going down this train of thought, he had an attachment to the thing or attached himself to the thing. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah. Typically that's what happens with these kind of events is that if an object is sparking it, there had to have been some kind of attachment in life or some kind of attachment that makes them hold on after life. So it'd be interesting to delve into that at some point. What that attachment.
Not I.
Well, here's the other interesting piece about that. Here's the other interesting piece about the encounter of him coming to that house. That occurred on the 23rd of April. I don't remember the year. 18 something. You know, somewhere back there in the 18s.
65?
Probably. We'll say it's April 23rd, 1865. He was killed April 26th. So 3 days before he was at that house, one could go out on a limb and say, let me try that again. One could go out on a limb and say that was the last doctor he encountered, more than likely, within that 3-day time period, right? One could also hazard a guess to say that place was emblazoned upon his mind as he was on his last legs and allowed himself to be killed, and that this was the last guy that could have helped me, and he didn't help me. So he could have had a very strong psychic connection to that landmark, you know? And then we can go way down the rabbit hole and say, that bringing a piece of his past into that place has now enhanced his ability to be associated with this place. You know, I know. Unfortunately, listeners cannot see what Kate is doing now, but she is hidden herself away in her coat with the realization of just how intense this type of spiritual activity can be.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Go ahead. Did you have a thought on that, Jamie?
I think that sounds perfectly plausible. Like, I think that as soon as you said that, I was like, that is exactly probably what happened. This guy was the last person that he saw that didn't help him. You know, obviously we know that guy had issues. So, and typically when people have a lot of issues in life, they carry those over. You know, the theory is that they carry those over into an afterlife, if there is an afterlife. And whatever you believe, the theory is that if there's something unfinished or something that upsets you right at the onset of death, that you carry that over into afterlife. So it is interesting to think that might have been what happened.
This was his, again, I haven't thought about like his progression of his escape in a long time because now it freaks me out. But I think this was his first stop.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I'm not going to look it up.
I think it was his first stop in Virginia, wasn't it?
In Virginia. Okay. Because I
think so.
He went over, didn't go over the Potomac first.
Yeah. He had like three other stops before ever getting across the state line, according to the, you know, the ever reliable Wikipedia.
Sure.
So according to that, so it could be completely wrong.
I was thinking too, I mean, kind of going down Jamie's thought process too, that when you said the onset of death, I was thinking like, was this kind of the death knell, like, you know, going to this house and not getting the physical aid that he needed may have kind of been, to continue mixing metaphors, the nail in the coffin for him.
It's also interesting that you heard normal footsteps, but different, you have heard the different footsteps. So the kind of step and then drag.
Yeah. No, I don't remember it being an abnormal. I assumed it was a perfectly physically capable, able-bodied roommate mucking around upstairs above me.
Yeah. I guess it could be how he wanted to present himself to whoever was listening, possibly. Who knows?
Wanted to make himself a little bit more attractive, maybe. I don't know.
Well, you know.
It's all guesswork at this point. One of my final questions here is, you did mention other people telling you tales about being at that house. Have any of these people told you that they had dreams following those experiences? Or are you, did you say that earlier and I just totally missed it?
Yeah, the one woman that I had mentioned this to said that a similar thing had happened to her. But that's all I recollect from that conversation with her, was because she had just been like, oh, he thinks you're cute, and just kind of, you know, that's right. That happened to me too, or whatever. And she just kind of like blew it off. And I'm like, I'm really disturbed. Please validate my feelings.
Kate, if we're able to get in touch with the current homeowners of this landmark, would you like to go with us to check this place out?
I don't know. Let's do it. Let's go on a field trip.
It could be fun.
If the anomaly in this home, you know, has made some sort of a connection with you, it'd be nice to have you there as well.
I don't want to bring it back.
We'll keep you as safe as we can. We'll keep you as safe as we can. We'll make sure nothing comes back.
Wrap me in tinfoil or something. I don't know.
we'll coat you in microbial silver. Tinfoil will hang, you know, wolf's bane around your neck. You'll be fine. Don't you worry about it. Well, that's wonderful. Anything else about this experience you want to share with our listeners? I'm you just look, curious. I just want to tell the listeners right now, just the look of just remorse and sadness and just, I don't know what the word is, on your face of, I can't believe this happened. This is the most distraught I've ever seen you look.
It's weird.
This is real life, people.
Well, I mean, again, I can think of maybe, you know, maybe two other occasions where I've had, you know, quote unquote, like experiences, but they've been very, very benign, very kind of matter of fact. And I've just been like, okay. But this is just this is something that's, I hate to admit it, but I think about this a lot.
That's clear. It's clear that you do think about this regularly because
I don't talk about it a lot, but I think about it a lot.
Well, you're gonna have plenty of opportunities to dig deeper into these things because, again, as our local historian about town, we're gonna drag you in on other episodes too. So this will not be the last time you'll be heard from on our program, and hopefully by the end of maybe season two, we'll reach some sort of
whatever closure.
We'll find some closure for you.
That's what I need.
That's what you can't keep thinking about this every day. You know, you've got too many other things to think about. Okay.
And I have made the mistake of mentioning all of this to a colleague at work.
Uh-oh.
Who, you know, where I work, up with no one. In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I was up there by myself. An
ivory tower.
Yes. I had mentioned, we were talking about ghost stories because he's got me so scared of so many things. And I had mentioned this, I don't know, years ago. Didn't even remember mentioning all this to him. And in the before times, like early 2020, I'm sitting at my desk and my door's open. And I hear down the hall, John Wilkes Booth.
Oh, no.
And I was absolutely mortified because I just forgot. I don't talk about this to people because it's so weird.
Yeah.
And I completely forgot I mentioned it to him. And he just kept doing that to me from down the hall. And it scared the crap out of me. And he finally stuck his head into my office. And I'm like, how did you? And I said, oh, my God, how did you know that I have this weird connection to John Wilkes Booth? And he goes, you told me? I went, oh, okay.
Perhaps in the opening and closing of this, I may jump into a few of my theories that I think may be what might have happened here just to... It might save your psyche to know that you're not being haunted by the... Wow, something just exploded outside of our house. Sorry. That you're not being...
That was really, really weird.
We found you!
We're just going to stop right there.
We're getting too close.
Kate, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you for the therapy.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that interview with Kate, and we're certainly happy she decided to share these experiences with us. A few days after recording that interview, we received a text from Kate regarding a passing joke made in the episode about there possibly being another Kate connected to John Wilkes Booth, and apparently there is, or was. She did a bit of research and discovered a woman named Kate Scott, who was a nurse for the Union Army. She apparently met Booth at an army ball, and they began seeing each other, maintaining a relationship until March 15, 1865, just 1 month before Lincoln's assassination. I've read a few additional accounts saying that the two had a daughter named Sarah. Further, Kate Scott gave testimony that she received a letter from and even saw Booth sometime after he was supposed to have been killed at the Garrett Barn, that he was clean-shaven and mostly unrecognizable. I would encourage our listeners to do some research into Kate Scott, I believe born Mary Catherine Scott. And there are several conspiracy theories out there. There are other accounts, letters, other testimonies that I think are well worth looking into, and many other rabbit holes that we can go down with this topic. And rest assured, we're certainly going to keep researching on our end. And Kate, if you're listening, I hope that you found it somewhat therapeutic to share your story with us. We certainly do appreciate it. Let us know your thoughts about this interview in the comments section of wherever you are hearing this.
And don't forget to subscribe for more content about this and other strange occurrences. To share your unexplained tales with us, please email us at windowlightpodcast@protonmail.com or write to us at The Window Light, P.O. Box 5102, Williamsburg, Virginia, 23188. As always, keep your intentions pure and your thoughts positive. Remember that karma is a real thing, and there's more going on out there in the dark than you may realize. So let's put some light on it. See you soon.